This is the corn panel. And given what I saw in the room this morning regarding the number of producers that have old crop corn, we will certainly take some time to address that issue, as well as other micro and macro economic issues that affect the corn market, both fundamentally, technically, as well as outside markets in terms of equities and the like. To my immediate right is Mike Zuzulo. Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. He is a part of the EFG crew, as well as Cadent, and we thank all of their support this year in helping us out with this particular event. And as I like to do, Mike, I'll go down the line with all of our producers and get their opening remarks.
Take it away. Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. Thank you so much for coming. Gosh, what a neat program this is once again this year. Everybody's in search of a bottom. I found my bottom.
At lunchtime.
But you're in search of a market bottom. Let's get that straight. I'm sitting on my bottom. That's right. The market bottom we're looking for isn't the short covering rally that a lot of the better panelists up here earlier today, at least from my take. What a wonderful group of people we have here today. The market bottom we're in search of right now is not a short covering rally. And that's our biggest concern right now, is we're after a short covering rally, because to get a bottom in demand, we have to get off this track of deflationary pressure in the futures markets. And you've seen the gold, the bonds, and the dollar, all three rally as safe haven investments and deflationary investments, I would argue, at this point. And the dollar in particular is the one left standing. So a lot of people have already talked about that today. But if you want to get a bottom in demand, we have to get a top in the dollar. If you stop by our booth, meet Steve from EFG up in Chicago, talk to Chuck, talk to Merrill, get one of our special reports. If you look at that special report, the problem is the dollar typically goes up during recessions, not down. And I think it goes back to what Mr. Ring was talking about earlier today. It makes a marketing plan very, very tough to do this year. So what we're going to do is assume deflationary pressures, demand pressures last until the banks bottom, and that causes a high in the top. When do the banks bottom? Well, we look for the business cycle to bottom around the fourth quarter of this year. If that's correct, then commodities and stocks should bottom around May, June time period. So we're going to be fearful of demand erosion going into mid-year. We also feel like in corn in particular, if there's no planting delays, if the acreage numbers on March 31st are above 85 million, even if we get an ethanol mandate increase, the downside in corn, it would make most sense that the market would take the most premium out as we get it planted in a timely manner. So there again, right around that May-June time period, most of the break in corn prices, most of the risk premium taken out of the futures should be in place. So that's how we're lining up at this stage.
Thank you very much, Mike. Next to Mike is Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson Group out of Champaign, Illinois, and is one of our newer analysts, probably our last hire. I don't know if you want to call them hire, volunteer. We lined them up and shooted them. I don't know what we did, but our last analyst that we brought on a regular basis, I think. She is on Friday mornings during the pre-opening commodity market report. Jackie, it is wonderful to see you this afternoon. Your opening remarks.
Thank you, Dave, and certainly thank you to all of you. And thank you to WILL for offering this opportunity to all of us, basically. I couldn't agree with Mike more in terms of watching the dollar. That's the number one thing that I'm watching. And to me, it's the major indicator as far as the world attitude goes toward investment. If we see a lot of investment coming into the dollar, which we know has been coming from the outside, it just tells you that this is a safer place to be than it is in their own country and in their own currency. And so I think to look for the bottom, you have to look to see the dollar have a, I would say, a sustained drop that's going to fall below 82. I think we could go down to 82 and come and bounce back and just trade sideways. I have some things in the long term that I feel very friendly about when it comes to corn. We can't really expect great things until we start to see the dollar lose its value. But in just watching what's going on, unleaded stocks right now are lower than they were a year ago at this time. A year ago at this time, we weren't talking about any of these types of problems. With unleaded stocks being lower, that's very positive to ethanol. And one of the things I hear people talk about all the time is crude oil, and its relationship to ethanol. It does have a relationship to ethanol to a point, but has a greater relationship to biodiesel. And so when you look at the crude oil that's actually traded on the screen over there, that's a representative of the oil that's down in Houston and in those areas. And we have oil running out of our ears down there. I have a friend who trades down there. He said they don't intend to build any storage because they anticipate that that is going to be a situation that's going to improve. But when you see the unleaded prices going up like they have, did any of you ask yourself, why are gasoline prices going up when crude oil is down in the 30s? Well, that's because the crude oil that's actually used to make our unleaded gasoline comes in from outside the United States. It tells you OPEC is actually following through and cutting. So I think, you know, that's something that's positive. Dry Baltic freight rates have been improving steadily. That tells us we're starting to see a little more activity on the ocean. And we talk so much about a lack of demand. I think you have to put it into perspective. It's more a lack of credit than it is necessarily a desire to buy our products. Yes, it's a lack of demand because our demand is lower than what it was. But we're starting to see some credit thawing going on in those markets. And I think, in general, that is a positive for us. It's a long-term positive. It's not necessarily going to come back overnight. I think the number one thing, and I don't know how all of you feel, but I can tell you Wall Street needs a better perception, and that's what they deal on. And the news media has to stop harping about everything that is slightly negative and start to look at some of the positive things that there are out there. Until that changes, it's going to be very difficult. I think that if you have corn that you're still sitting on and you know that you have to sell it soon, you might want to take care of this or take advantage of the rally that we've just seen right now and the positive basis.
Thank you very much, Jackie. Next to Jackie is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And Paul is certainly one of the one or two deans of the WILL agricultural family. It was his genius, and I've told this story before, but it bears repeating. It was his genius and that of a few others that essentially created this service in the permutation that you see now, with a strong emphasis on marketing and agricultural weather and a weekly show called Commodity Week. And Paul, Dean doesn't mean old.
Well, thank you for those kind words, Dave. And it's always fun to be with you on a weekly basis on the telephone and probably a monthly basis on the Commodity Week program. It's only fair that we are sharing a booth over there with our grain division, ADM Grain, and Dan Zwicker and Perry Dixon, Kathy Hanners, and Amy Lieberman. They've been a fine group to we're also sharing a rocker and some rabbits to give away at the same time. Kathy has a unique deal and salute today. She was giving commodity market reports on WILL radio from Cargill, Tuscola. I can remember when I was in college there sitting on a 930 Comfort King Case tractor working the fields and listening to a Cargill market report. And I think she even told me that she started with Cargill before they even built that great big terminal down in Tuscola. And we have a lot of fun kidding her how young she really is. And thanks, Kathy. One of the things that Kathy and I, one afternoon when times got slow, we talked about the 10 elite commodity traders in the Midwest. And we also talked about 10 of the commodity events that really have changed our business and our time forever. And one of the ones that jump out of that this last year was the tremendous margin calls and the money sent to Chicago. We even heard that some grain companies had to send over $1 billion a day to meet margin calls in Chicago. This is an enormous deal. And, you know, this last year I bought a farm. I transferred the money out of my stock account and was going to get it moved over. And they said, the bank said it had to be 10 days. And the settlement of the farm was within 2 days. And, you know, moving large sums of money by check or wire transfer is an enormous task. And one of the things that I really feel it is enormously important if you're going to play this game for years to come is line up a line of credit and be able to make these marketing decisions and take advantage of price swings and also price volatility to take advantage of your bottom line. The second thing that I want to tell you is we hear the word $4 being used a lot as an area to kind of skate out from under this old crop corn. One idea that I have is go on and market it, buy July futures at this 375 to 380 mark, and then comfortably write a $4 corn call against it. You can put an extra maybe 25 to 50 cents a bushel into your pocket, and that with the cash price that you're receiving is one way to kind of get out from under it. Business has been enormous in our office, and we sure love that, but there is a tremendous amount of volatility every day of the week, every evening, and you can take advantage of that with either options or futures and trade your way out of some of these tough times in the marketplace. My other idea is that by writing $5 calls, I think maybe 10 cents tonight, is an opportunity instead of a detriment. So we aren't as bearish as maybe as Mr. Ring. We do subscribe to his service and love every word he says. But there is, I think, a tremendous amount of wealth on the sidelines. And the other point I want to make is I love the Murray Weiss's comments. I'd rather buy stocks at this time than $6,000 an acre of Central Illinois farmland. But, you know, there's tremendous opportunities out here. But the trouble is that you do have to have that reserve buying power, that reserve power to make good through these tough times. And I personally don't think it's going to be as tough as what some of the pundits are saying.
Well, in that case, Paul, how many shares of AIG can I sell you at 37 cents? Next to Paul is Pete Manhart. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Pete is our pre-opening commodity report analyst on Tuesday. He and his colleague, Kurt Kimmel, who does the opening and closing reports on Monday, sort of anchor the front end of the week, give us a fresh perspective each week on the market, in some ways forms my opinions about how the balance of the week may play out. So very important to get those early week reports and begin to digest those. And for that, we thank you, Pete, and we look forward to your opening remarks.
Well, I heard about a new hire. I didn't know where the paychecks came from at WLL. That's one. And Cooley said he was sitting on what kind of a tractor?
930 case.
A 930 case. Okay, I'm 62, and I didn't hear what he said, so I know what a 930 case is. I just thought maybe he was 30 years older than me. Okay, as far as the market goes, we had a nice bounce today. If you look in the last month, we had December corn up around 425 to 430 a month ago. Four was the bottom. When we went through it, we went to 370 last week. Here we are today back at 410. So we talk about how bad it's going to get and how bad it's going to get. We went through there. We've bounced back up. I would be ready with some kind of a plan to either, if I'm not going to sell cash, to buy puts underneath it and hold the cash for the bottom, for the top coming up. Somebody asked me today, you think corn will get back to 440? I think it's got a chance to get there, but it's also got a chance to go to 340. So, I mean, which is it going to do first? I don't know. And when, how soon in your plan do you need to sell cash? So you need to protect the bottom, buy puts. If you sell cash, you can buy a call to be in it if we do bounce a lot. And having just a simple plan like that puts you at ease. It protects your bottom line. But have some kind of a plan to do something. As far as opportunities out there, they will be there. Volatility. When I started in the business, it was 94 or 5. A 20 or 30 cent move in a year was a big move. Since last Wednesday to today, it's been a 30, 40, 50 cent move. And in corn, in a lot of days, we've had a 40 cent move in one day. So have traps laid either with at the elevator selling cash, at your brokerage buying puts or selling calls. Paul mentioned selling a $5 call to get an additional so many funds. I don't think that's bad on old crop corn. I wouldn't do that on new crop until we know more. But old crop, I would be looking to do something to add to the value and protect the bottom side.
How many in the audience have already begun their marketings for new crop corn? What's that?
How many started a year ago?
How many started a year ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and jump into that new crop corn area, Mike, and get your ideas on that. We heard pretty well what some of the ideas were on old crop, so we'll give you the first bite of the apple on new crop opportunities.
We've got about 20% in cash-related sales at this point on new crop, Dave. We've got another 40 to 50% done in May puts, not December puts, but May puts. The intention we have right here is that either we're going to bottom here right now or we're going down a whole nother level. The stock market took out its fall lows, both the S&P and the Dow Jones. We're concerned that between now and March corn goes off the board, which is just in a few days, we're concerned that that 305 low is still on the table if the stock market can't bottom here. So we did May puts in the front end because they're cheaper, and we feel like they're time-sensitive enough to get us through this next 10 to 15-day window. I think the biggest thing that we have to look at as far as the big-picture agricultural demand side and why we want to be more aggressive on hedging this year, especially if we get back to profitable levels, is, you know, USDA is saying 09 world trade total is looking to be lower for the first time since 1982. Dairy prices compared to the feed ratio, the worst margin or the worst crush since 1983. When you look at agriculture exports, I fear, and the guys at risk management fear, if our unemployment levels go to 9.5% or 10% in the United States, and our top five agricultural buyers who buy 62% of our agricultural exports by volume are Canada, Mexico, Japan, China, and the EU, how will they be if we go to 10% unemployment? We've heard a lot about China leading the market higher or leading us out economically. It would seem to us it would be the exact opposite with these five top buyers of our agricultural exports. So we are heavy defense players this year. But like I said, by the time we get to the middle part of the year, if we have gone lower and if we have checked some of these major lows in Dees corn and we see the improvement in the banks showing up, then we can start saying, okay, the worst is over. So flexibility is extremely important. But I guess like a lot of the other people today, we've all thought about how high can it go. I think it has to be looked at from a standpoint of our margins and our profitability. How low can it go too? And if you look at that in the early part of the year, my experience in 1996 and my experience last year were the people that looked at both the upside and the downside in the wintertime were the people that came out the best. So that's the best we can give you right now. We hope you integrate some of that.
I'm not quite sure why there are still people in this room right now and they're not all out in the hall making a marketing decision. here's my, you know, in late at night when I have too much pizza in me and I'm staring at the TV, Jackie Vakes, here's where my worst case scenario starts bugging me and chewing on my brain. You saw all the hands that still had old crop corn to be marketed in the room today. Hopefully some of that will get let go soon. But let's say for the moment it does not. And let's further say that this room is fairly representative of a large part of the Corn Belt. Let's then further say that a lot of this corn goes under loan. Not out of the question. With a normal growing season and 85 million acres of corn, come September 1, we could be dealing with two crops. Yes?
Oh, absolutely.
And no widening basis. Yes?
Absolutely.
Help me out here. I don't want this nightmare to come true.
So this is your nightmare and we're selling your corn?
What's that?
I said, this is your nightmare and we're selling your corn, right?
2 years of corn
Two
in
years
September.
Worth of corn. Well, I wouldn't still be sitting on the old crop corn at that point in time. I think there's plenty of reason, especially when you look at how good basis has been and continues to be. You know, that says to me farmers are hanging on tight. We all get to a point when we need money. What you don't want to do is be selling at the same time everybody else is selling at, because you lose two things there. You lose basis, and most of the time you lose the futures, because when a grain company buys from you, they sell the futures to protect themselves, or they have the right to do that. So I think when you're trying to avoid having two crops when we get to September time, you have to know where you stand. You have to know what your break-evens are. You have to know when your cash needs are there. What are some of the options that you can take? Make the cash sale. If you choose to re-own it, you can buy a call. If you want fixed risk, you can buy the futures and buy an at-the-money put and have fixed risk. And you can go to the bank on that. You know, it gives you more flexibility. And besides that, you know, what's your opportunity cost if you let everything sit? I believe in the long term we can go higher. That doesn't mean we should sit on the grain. I think today's a good example. We went up to 384 on old crop. 385 is a 50-day moving average. 391 is a 100-day moving average. When you look at new crop today, we went to 415. 418 is a 50-day moving average. And 425 is 100-day moving averages. Those are really important things for a couple of reasons, because the funds watch those numbers extremely close, too. And they are a major overhead resistance for them. We break through them, we close above them, we can go higher. But if history repeats itself, we've seen ourselves bang our heads against those numbers numerous times. And so I think what you've got to be doing, what I've been telling people, new crop corn, get out there and either make up your mind, you're going to check what your basis is. If your basis isn't acceptable or you don't want to make a sale because you have some sold, get some puts in place. Do a bear put spread. We've been doing bear puts down to $3, from here down to $3. In other words, a $4, $5. If you want to take a little risk, do a bear put spread and sell a call above the market. It reduces your cost and still gives you downside protection. Or if you like to use futures, sell the futures and buy an at-the-money put and get yourself a fixed risk position. Get yourself a fixed risk position and still have opportunity to the upside. Still not listening to me, though.
Jackie, were you saying something? Over the last couple years, Paul Cooley, your strategy has been essentially sit on your hands on the sideline, be patient. The market is your friend. The trend is higher. Don't give away the farm too early. And that sort of advice has paid off for those who took it, I'm sure. However, this year seems a little bit more difficult in terms of making that call as a cut-and-dried thing. We like to talk on the air on Wednesday about some outside things. We've been talking a lot, Paul and I, of late, about ethanol on the air. And what will the government do or what won't they do and we continue to get mixed signals. Of late, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack has been saying, yep, we like the idea of 13, 14% blend ethanol. It won't take hardly any time to do it. We can do it tomorrow if we have a mind to. And then we go to the EPA, Paul, and their administrators, and they're saying it is going to be a long, multi-month, drawn-out affair. So, given your strategy of late to hold them, what are you recommending this time around?
Yeah. Let's go in here. One question from the audience here. How many think we'll see the stock market at 6,500? Raise your hand.
What year?
Now. I mean, you know, next 30.
68 today.
65 on the downside. Right? 6,500 on the downside. How about 6,000? 5,500? How many people think the worst is behind us? Okay.
One brave soul.
One brave soul. Well, that's interesting. One thing that I really thought that the new government in Washington with the Congress and the new administration, we'd see a little more action quicker and a little more dynamic leadership. You know, all those meetings in the Conrad Hilton Hotel in Chicago and the Drake Hotel in Chicago and all those planning sessions. And we do hear the key question here is ethanol, and I think that's the magic wand that we're going to see in the corn market. It's not going to happen in the feed area. We do think the export feed people have let their inventories go down to zero. We get reports that the feed industry is basically on an empty tank as well. And Vilsack says we're close. You know, I'm sure that they're under enormous pressure to get things going. There's a bunch of these Virasun plants are for sale. And the quickest way the Secretary of Agriculture and the think tanks around know to get the farm economy booming again is ethanol. If we can get some support from, yes, those great land-grant college professors and some of those other people that say, oh, it's bad for two-cycle engines and people like that out there, you know, I think that we will get the ethanol deal pushed through and pushed through quickly. I think it's going to be a tremendous impact on demand and the idea that things will get better down the road at some point in time. It'll also help if we do see $50 a barrel crude oil. And I think crude oil is acting pretty good. Kramer on television says it's time to buy international oil stocks, and I'm even leaning in that direction as well. I don't agree with the guy on the panel this morning that said that, oh, this big 1.4 billion bushel carryover is going to just flood and make the corn market get really horrible this far. We've carried that kind of a crop over before, particularly when we see better demand down the road. I think the other thing that we have to say is that, you know, be patient. Be a marketer of grain. Don't try to hoard it for too long in here because, you know, you can get in trouble with that. But there will be some dry weather rallies. Take advantage of that. Make sure you don't have quality problems. And the other thing that I continue to hear from my pals at the table we ate at is less fertilizer. And the other one that I really have the opinion of is that I think that the guys in the north will plant more corn because they hear the people in the south are going to plant more beans, and they don't want to get caught in that trap, Rue. So those are some of the things we're looking at, and I'll be very surprised if we see $3 corn in this country.
90 days ago, it seemed to me, at least for folks that were in this part of the country, that it was a slam dunk about what to do in your marketing decisions, especially if you had already done some 2009, 2010 marketing in beans, taking advantage of some of those wonderful prices that we saw when the old crop were at $16 and change, and thinking, well, I'm just going to drill into my corn stalks, have lower input costs, capture that wonderful price that I had hedged earlier and be done with it and go on my merry way. I think since then it's become a much more complex question about what to do. Fertilizer prices are coming down. There's no doubt about that. And the margins are making it a little bit more murky as to decide which way to lean. So I go to my good friend at the end of the table, and I ask him, I say, Pete, all things being equal right now, for folks around here in East Central Illinois and Western Indiana, what do you think has the best chance of profitability and why?
Are you talking about old corn or new corn?
New corn versus new beans.
Let me go back to woulda, coulda, shoulda. I got clients that have sold no 2007 crop yet. Why? Somebody told them corn was going to 10 and beans were going to 20. They could have sold it. I've got people that have got all of the 09 crop sold, half their 10 and 11 crop sold on the board for over $7. So you're the one that has to decide. We can tell you what we think. Sometimes what we think doesn't turn out right, especially if it's me or one of these other three, because you remember what we said. But we're trying to get you to make a marketing plan. And right now, depending on what kind of ground you're on, what kind of averages you have, corn still usually pencils out on the good Midwestern soils better than soybeans. On old crop corn, we would still be looking on any bounces to make cash sales and or put, if you don't want to sell, put puts underneath it. On new crop corn, we're still looking at the same thing. I've got people, as I said, that have still 2007 corn they didn't sell. And I've got people that have already sold half their 10 and 11 corn. You have to have a marketing plan that decides for you where I put my bottom by buying puts or selling calls against it or selling cash at the elevator or selling futures through a broker. But you need a plan that will try to make you have profits this year. Last year, one of the best years we have ever had because of both yields and prices. This year, a hopefully survival year, the way things look now, unless we get some surprise that makes prices a lot better. But right now in good soils, corn looks like it's going to make the most money. In lighter soils, possibly beans.
All right. Questions? Contacts out west, Iowa, Minnesota, are they talking about planting more corn, less corn?
Just as much corn as last year.
More corn than last year because it was wet spring in Iowa, and they hear the reports of all that extra beans going in the ground, and they're going to be a little bit of a contrarian.
Looking at me? You're looking at me, aren't you? I was just going to say, my guys in Minnesota and Iowa are saying the same thing, although I've heard more guys talking about going back to 50-50. You know, some guys have gone away from that over the last couple of years.
Greg, in the Maine Corn Belt, our surveys just came back, and 82% of the surveys that came back said no change or bigger corn in the Maine part of the Corn Belt. We were shocked by that, but we also asked the question at the bottom, did you book your fertilizer early? And about 80% of that 82% said, yes, we did, at least part of it. So it looked like agronomy and rotation fit the bill this year again. Prices really aren't going to make that much of a difference except here later on the swing acres. Our meteorologist came up with an update just this morning and said we're on the lookout for a wetter corn planting season again this spring, right around that April 15th to May 15th time period. If we get a wet pattern set up in the four corners by New Mexico, Arizona, we're looking at corn planting delays. So it goes back to flexibility and what Pete was talking about. It's going to be a tough, tough year.
A lot of money sitting on that sideline in the funds. Question is, and by the way, it was the February time frame last year that they were putting their hands in both hands, say, gimme, gimme, gimme. are they going to be back? And if they are going to be back, in what intensity are they going to be back?
We heard from one speaker this morning talking about index funds. They were the new one. They were the ones that bought and held. They still have half of what they bought last year, which is a huge amount. The people that got out and helped drive it down were the trend following funds. They get a signal off a chart, and they actually went from very long to very short. So funds are still around. They just aren't going to have as much money to put in there to drive it as high, and they won't be as prevalent.
Mike, a year ago, we were talking about $40 billion going into grain commodities around this time of year.
I think that's where the people in Chicago really have a good beat on this. The index funds, like Pete said, are not going to be there as much. The hedge funds, there's going to be about half as many hedge funds in the next 2 years as there are now. It's really about commodity trading funds. And the key for us in agriculture is to understand they like to buy and they like to sell. They really don't care which side of the market they're on. So they can make our life a lot tougher if they get on the sell side.
I have a friend that's a meteorologist with one of the large trading hedge funds, and he basically said that they were up 30% and they still had a lot of withdrawals out of their fund because there's a flight to quality and a lower risk. I think they're still going to be around, but I think with the stock market the way it is, if you had $100,000 invested with a hedge fund, I bet a dollar you're going to take some of that money off the table. So there is going to be some money taken off the table, but it's still a game that's very popular and will be.
Well, I think when you look at the big picture on it, you have to look at what they're looking at investing in. Barclays Bank just did a big survey of 260 European investors, including some funds, and they said their top performance as far as what they're picking is 23% of them said gold, 21% of them said crude, and 20% said grains as far as where they look to invest their money this year.
This morning, one of the speakers talked about you will be the only people that talked to us that had a profit last year. So funds are still looking. They just aren't as many, and they don't have as much money as they did in previous years.
Question here.
This question probably would affect wheat much more than corn, but for the last 5 years or so in a row, wheat, rice, and other strategic grains have been going down in the ending stocks globally each year. And from a position of our role in the U.S., could we look at some things such as a strategic reserve for wheat, which could impact that position and then indirectly would affect corn?
Well, I've been a real strong proponent of, having a grain reserve just because to take the problems out of the bust and the boom like we had with the wheat that destroyed a lot of the players at $20 a bushel. But, it's a very political deal. You're bringing up a very hot potato. I don't think it's such a bad deal, and I also, if I was the Secretary of Agriculture, and if corn does have a threatening chance to go down to $3 a bushel, I'd be the first one on the block to say that the government's job should be to step in there and buy 10, 20 million bushels of corn, and you'd be a bit surprised how that temper the bearishness in the marketplace. It's not very popular, and with the administration and politics the way it is, I think it's dead on arrival.
Politically dead.
Wheat. I heard the word wheat, and I guess we ought to try to figure out what is going to happen with that 5 million additional acres that has to go into something else. What's it going into, Mike Zuzulo?
Well, mostly beans, we think, Dave. And, wheat for us, and again, going back to the special report you all can take a copy home with, I think for us to get to our overvalue level in Dease corn of 520, we have to have at least a 12% mandate in ethanol because that's what we factored into our balance sheets. We have to have wheat leading us higher. I was astounded. The feed wheat domestically here in the United States that is fed here in our livestock, it jumped 15 times in volume versus 07 versus last year. If that's not a statistic that doesn't grab you and say, we don't want wheat going down below $1.50 premium to corn because then it jumps into the feed basket again, both here and globally, that's a major driver in this corn price in 09 for us.
So I'm hearing some demand pickup. I'm hearing demand pickup in the ethanol crush. Jackie Vakes, am I hearing demand pickup in livestock? Is the second half of 2009 going to be better for producers? And would more corn begin to disappear in the second half of this year?
I believe so. With all of our livestock producers, although they've been actively hedging, and we have cattle hedged all the way out to April of 2010 using the live cattle crush, the guys who've been actively hedging are actually doing very, very well. Guys who aren't, I think, will still see some fallout. There was good news in the beef market from the standpoint that Japan came in. Japan is going to, that's what they announced the other day, increase their beef imports by 20% this year. That was quite a surprise to the marketplace. So I think the outlook for corn is solid when it comes to the livestock. We have not lost the numbers that we thought we were going to lose, although we are going to lose some on the dairy side. We're going to have more of a buyout, and you know we're probably going to lose at least 100,000 cows, if not 200,000 cows on that side.
I think Informa came out that 5 million acres might not even get planted this year, and I wondered if that was all marginal ground. What is that ground?
Well, I think, you know, if you went and traveled across the Midwest last year, you saw corn grown in pastures everywhere.
I saw it growing on top of skyscrapers.
I swear you saw it in gardens in some places. And so I think that's part of what they're talking about. They're just talking about the land. And you also had people who planted corn on land that really should have never had it planted on at all.
Well,
you know.
I believe we're going to plant acres. We got 3.8 or 9 million less of wheat. We're going to have a million less of cotton, maybe some less of rice, some coming out of the program. And I don't know about your area, but any area I know of, when ground isn't farmed by somebody, somebody else gets in there and farms it. So I don't think there's going to be very much ground that's not farmed. And I think most of that 5 million acres will go to something. And in most fringe areas, it's going to go to soybeans, not corn.
Well, let me just then flat out ask the panel, are you $5 bullish new crop corn at some point? Yes or no?
In December futures, yeah.
In December futures.
Overvalue is 520, so, but I think the second half of the marketing year is the most likely without corn planting delays.
Jackie?
Yes, definitely. December futures.
December futures. Paul?
No.
No. No time this year.
No in 09, but maybe July of 10, which would be this year's crop.
This year's crop, but not till July of
but
next year.
Not till then, and I think mostly because of world economy. Until the world economy has a turn, the attitude is still that we're going to hold the top on things.
Let's give this panel a round of applause, please.